chapter 7, the sacrifice performed by Daksha, text 35. Siddha Uchuhu. Ayam Tvat Katham Rishtapi Yushanadhyam. Manovaranah Klesha Davagni Dagdha. Trishartu Vagadho Nasam Sasmaradavam. Nanishkramati Brahma Sampannavannah. Siddha Uchuhu. Ayam Tvat Katham Rishta Piyushanadhyam. Manovaranah Klesha Davagni Dagdhah. Trishartho Vagadho Nasasmaradavam. Nanishkramati Brahma Sampannavannah.
Ayam Tvat Katham Rishta Piyushanadhyam. Trishartho Vagadho Nasasmaradavam. Nanishkramati Brahma Sampannavam.
Siddha Uchuhu. Ayam Tvat Katham Rishta Piyushanadhyam. Manovaranah Klesha Davagni Dagdhah. Trishartho Vagadho Nasasmaradavam. Nanishkramati Brahma Sampannavannah. Siddha Uchuhu. Ayam Tvat Katham Rishta Piyushanadhyam.
Ayam Tvat Katham Rishta Piyushanadhyam.
Manovaranah Klesha Davagni
Dagdhah.
Trishartho Vagadho Nasam Sasmaradavam.
Trishartho Vagadho Sasmaradavam.
Nanishkramati Brahma Sampannavannah.
Nanishkramati Brahma Sampannavannah. Ladies, please.
Siddha
Uchuhu. Ayam Tvat Katham Rishta Piyushanadhyam. Manovaranah Klesha Davagni Dagdhah.
Siddha Uchuhu.
Siddha Uchuhu.
Ayam Tvat Katham Rishta Piyushanadhyam.
Ayam
Tvat Katham Rishta Piyushanadhyam. Manovaranah Klesha Davagni Dagdhah. Trishartho Vagadho Nasasmaradavam.
Nanishkramati Brahma Sampannavannah.
Siddhaha, the Siddhas, Uchuhu, prayed, Ayam, this, Tvat Katha, your pastimes, Mrishta, pure, Piyusha, of nectar, Nadyam, in the river, Manaha, of the mind, Varanaha, the elephant, Klesha, sufferings, Dava, Agni, by the forest fire, Dagdha, burned, Trisha, thirst, Artaha, afflicted, Avagadha, being immersed, Nasasmara, does not remember, Davam, the forest fire, or the miseries, Na Nishkramati, not come out, Brahma, the absolute, Sampannavat, like having merged, Na, our. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. The Siddhas prayed, like an elephant that has suffered in a forest fire, but can forget all its troubles by entering a river. Our minds, O Lord, always merge in the nectarian river of your transcendental pastimes, and they desire never to leave such transcendental bliss, which is as good as the pleasure of merging in the Absolute. Purport. This statement is from the Siddhas, the inhabitants of Siddhaloka, where the eight kinds of material perfection are complete. The residents of Siddhaloka have full control in the eight kinds of yogic perfection, but from their statement it appears that they are pure devotees. They always merge in the nectarian river of hearing the pastimes of the Lord. Hearing of the pastimes of the Lord is called Krishna Katha. Similarly, there is a statement by Prahlad Maharaj that those who are always merged in the ocean of the nectar of describing the Lord's pastimes are liberated and have no fear of the material condition of life. The Siddhas say that the mind of an ordinary person is full of anxieties. The example is given of the elephant who has suffered in a forest fire and who enters into a river for relief. If persons who are suffering in the forest fire of this material existence will only enter into the nectarian river of the descriptions of the pastimes of the Lord, they will forget all the troubles of the miserable material existence. The Siddhas do not care for fruitive activities such as performing sacrifices and achieving the good results. They simply merge in the transcendental discussions of the pastimes of the Lord. That makes them completely happy, without care for pious or impious activities. For those who are always in Krishna consciousness, there is no need to perform any kind of pious or impious sacrifices or activities. Krishna consciousness is itself complete, for it includes all the processes praised in the Vedic scriptures. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahaganda Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Sri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Nitinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. After the sacrificial arena of Daksha has been devastated by Lord Shiva, finally the Supreme Lord appears and all the assembled personalities there, the demigods and others, offer prayers to the Supreme Lord. So in this series of prayers, the residents of Siddha Loka, who are called the Siddhas, are now offering prayers. As Srila Prabhupada mentions here, the Siddha Loka is characterized by the residents naturally having mystic perfections. These mystic perfections of the path of Ashtanga Yoga or the Eightfold Process of Yoga are called Siddhis. Siddhis means perfections. But these perfections are material perfections. They are mystic perfections that generally yogis obtain as a byproduct of their yogic practices. Genuine yogis do not get disturbed or attracted by these mystic perfections. These mystic perfections or siddhis can be mind-boggling and extremely captivating for the common mass of people. For example, someone can float in the air, someone can walk on water, someone can reach out a hand and get something from Melbourne while sitting in Perth, or someone can read another person's mind. Now these are siddhis. And imagine if some human being is able to obtain these perfections, what kind of popularity or fame that person will get, and how intoxicating such powers will be for such a person. So even for genuine yogis who progress on the path of Ashtanga Yoga and they encounter such powers that come automatically as a result of such practice, there is a danger that they may get distracted and they may start thinking that these powers are it. This is the purpose of my yoga. Now I'm successful because I have these powers. And they may try to utilize these powers not for the original purpose for which they started the yoga in the first place, but now they want to get popularity, fame, name, or some other material thing like control over people and so on. This happens. This is a topic in itself. In India, you will still find, even to this day, there are some yogis who will exhibit such powers. One time, one devotee was telling me about how this yogi in the Kumbh Mela, the huge gathering, religious gathering that takes place once in 12 years in Prayag, Allahabad, that this yogi was on the first floor of a building and there was a lady who was walking by on the street and she was carrying some foodstuffs like fruit and so on. He just reached out from there and took some fruit out of her bag or something. And that was quite a long distance away. It must have been at least 30 feet away, 30 or 40 feet away. And one can only imagine her reaction when she saw that happening. Srila Prabhupada mentioned that there are some yogis who enter into the Ganga in the Himalayas and they emerge in Calcutta. Having gone in the water of the Ganga, and they emerge in a very short span of time. So there are such things that happen. Devotees of the Lord, of course, are never impressed by such a display. There is a little story about how one person went to the Himalayas to perform austerities and do yogic practices and came back after many years having accomplished some feat. He now could walk on the water. So he announced to the village people that today I'm going to walk across the river. And many people gathered. And he actually walked across the water. And everyone was struck with wonder. But there was one devotee from Perth who was there. And he scoffed at it and he said, I'm not impressed at all. So your feat is just worth 25 cents or maybe $1. So that yogi was outraged. He said, what do you mean? He asked him, he said, you know, how long have you taken to learn this art of walking over the water? And he said, it took me 12 years of hard austerity and yogic practices to achieve this. So what you have achieved by 12 years, I can attain just in a few seconds, because when I work for a few minutes, I get $1 or 25 cents. I can pay a boatman and walk, go across the river. So I don't need to work for 12 years to do what you are doing. So the point being, the devotees of the Lord are not at all impressed by such things. On the contrary, they like to stay away from such things because they know they can be extremely captivating distractions. I mean, the ordinary material pleasures of the world are just small time compared to this. Imagine if you could read people's minds. Just see the kind of control you could exercise on people and how people would run after you like anything, or run away from you perhaps. No one wants to be in someone who can read his mind, right? But these powers are acquired on the earth after many lifetimes of yogic practice. Some people are born here with these powers, but that's because of the yogic practices they have done in previous lives. So it is not naturally obtained. They are acquired by dint of hard practice of yoga and performance of austerities over a long period of time. But in Siddha Loka, everyone, all the residents there, are naturally endowed with these powers from their birth. That's why this planet is called Siddha Loka. Loka means planet. Siddha means those who have attained perfection. So it is a planet of the perfected beings. Not spiritually perfected, materially perfected beings. But in this case, this group of Siddhas who is offering prayers appear to be pure devotees, as Srila Prabhupada says. Quote, the residents of Siddha Loka have full control in the eight kinds of yogic perfection, but from their statement it appears that they are pure devotees. Because only a pure devotee will speak as they have spoken in this verse. They glorify the process of hearing the pastimes of Krishna, of hearing Krishna Katha. And they give a very nice metaphor to it for an elephant who is afflicted by the heat and the discomfort of a forest fire, and somehow with great difficulty he flees, saves himself and finds a river, and he enters into the river where the heat and the fire of the forest now cannot touch him. He experiences a great amount of happiness and relief. He forgets about the suffering he has endured in the forest. So similarly, the Siddhas say that people in this world are afflicted with the threefold miseries of material existence. So what are the threefold miseries? They are called Trivida Tapa. Tri means three. Incidentally, it shows that Sanskrit is the origin of all these languages. Three. Yeah, three from three. Vidha means types. So three types of tapa. Tapa means miseries. Tapa literally means heat. So, you know, when someone is in a hot seat, yes? So Trivida Tapa means the threefold miseries of material existence. The three types, one inflicted by other living entities, which is called Adhibhautika Klesha. Klesha is suffering. Misery is inflicted by nature or by the demigods, Adhidaivika Klesha. And finally, Adhyatmika Klesha, or the miseries that are produced by one's own body and mind. So all living entities in this material world are subject to these three types of miseries. And therefore, no one can be happy. Everyone is suffering in the material world. And if one wants to get relief from this threefold misery, then one must enter into the river of the pastimes of Krishna. Tvat Katha. The Siddhas pray to the Lord. Narrations about you, my Lord, our Lord. Mrishta, very pure. Piyusha means nectar. Nadya means river. So the narrations about your pastimes are like a river of nectar, of pure nectar. So for conditioned souls like us who are suffering the pangs of material existence, enter into this river of Krishna Katha. That means we absorb ourselves in the hearing of the pastimes of the Lord. Then we obtain complete relief. There is a similar verse in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the famous Gopi Gita, the Song of the Gopis. It is a celebrated verse, often cited by devotees. And King Pratap Rudra in Jagannath Puri, when he went incognito or in disguise and began massaging Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet, then he chanted many verses, and this was one of the series of verses he chanted. Tava kathamritam tapta jivanam kavibhiriditam kalmashapaham shravana mangalam srimadatatam bhuvigrinantiye bhuridajanaha. Very famous verse. Is generally chanted musically. I've cut out the music, I just spoke it simply. So this is a prayer by the gopis to Krishna, where they say, Tava kathamritam. My dear Krishna, the nectar, amritam, of your narrations, katha, tvat kathamritam, is tapta jivanam. Tapta means those who are afflicted by the tapa. Tapa, I mentioned earlier, is the threefold miseries. So those who are burning in the heat of this material existence, they are tapta. So this Krishna Katha, this nectar of Krishna Katha, is the life. It is a source of relief for all those who are so burning in the fire of material existence. Kavibhiriditam. Kavi refers to great philosophers. Iritam means described. So your narrations have been described and continue to be described by great philosophers and devotees. Kalmasha apaham. Kalmasha refers to the sinful reactions. Apaham means eliminated. So by hearing Krishna Katha, all our sins are completely destroyed. Shravana Mangalam, just by hearing this, all good fortune and auspiciousness is invoked. Srimad Atatam, it is broadcast all over the world, and Srimad, it is full of spiritual power. Bhuvi Grinanti, on this earth, all those people who accept this process of Krishna Katha and distribute Krishna Katha all over are the most munificent or beneficent people. So the greatest welfare work we can do, according to the gopis of Vrindavan, is that we can speak about Krishna and enable others to speak and hear about Krishna. And in that way, tapta jivanam, such katha will become our life and soul, and it will give us complete relief from the pangs of material existence. Srila Prabhupada also cites a statement by Prahlad Maharaj, that those who are always merged in the ocean of the nectar of describing the Lord's pastimes are liberated and have no fear of the material condition of life. This is also another popular verse that Srila Prabhupada used to chant often. Naivo dvije paraduratyaya vaitaranyas tvadvirya gayana mahamrita magna chittaha shoche tato vimukha chetasa indriyartha maya sukhaya bharam udvahato vimudhan. Na udvije, Prahlad tells the Lord, my dear Lord, I am not at all afflicted or disturbed by what? Paraduratyaya vaitaranyas, by this terrible material existence which is constantly giving us so much pain. But I am all right. I have no problem with this. I have no issue with this. I am not at all disturbed by the threefold miseries of material existence. Naivo dvije paraduratyaya vaitaranyas. So why am I not disturbed? Tvadvirya gayana mahamrita magna chittaha. Chitta means consciousness, magna means absorbed. Because my consciousness is constantly absorbed. Absorbed in what? Tvadvirya gayana. Gayana means singing. My mind is constantly absorbed in the singing of your wonderful acts, tvadvirya, which is maha amrita, which is great nectar. Because I'm constantly absorbed in hearing about your pastimes and your messages and in reciting them, therefore I'm not at all affected by the threefold miseries. Rather, for myself I have no misery, but there is only one sorrow I have. Shoche tataha. For those people who are averse to you, vimukha chetasa. Chetasa means consciousness. Vimukha means who have turned their face away. So for myself, my dear Lord, I have no issues with this material world. I am happy here because I am constantly absorbed in hearing and chanting about you. But the sorrow that I have is for those people who have turned their back to you, so to speak. Shoche tato vimukha chetasa. Why have they done it? Indriyartha. For the sake of their senses. For sense gratification. And such sense gratification is maya sukha. It is illusory happiness. The false happiness presented by the illusory energy of the Lord. And driven by false desires for happiness in this world, what do? Bharam udvahato. They lift all sorts of unnecessary burdens and responsibilities in their life. I have to do this, I have to accomplish that, I have to achieve this material goal. So they are constantly struggling to set higher and higher standards and live their dreams in the material world, not realizing that actually it's nothing but a dream. So I only have sorrow for them, my dear Lord. So this is the prayer of Prahlad Maharaj. Indeed, very appropriate for this particular verse. So the Siddhas are also praying like that. Again, also it says here that the minds of those who are The Siddhas do not care for fruitive activities such as performing sacrifices. They are simply merged in transcendental discussions of the pastimes of the Lord. So devotees of the Lord are not very concerned about ordinary religiosity, which is religion that is performed for obtaining some material benefits, or which is practiced just as a formality. But rather, they have understood the essence of true religion, the essence of true spirituality, which is to constantly absorb oneself in the hearing and chanting of the Lord, in the association of devotees. Do you know why? If you can give me one sentence as to why Srila Prabhupada founded the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. One sentence that he said, in as few words as possible. Why was this movement founded by Srila Prabhupada?
Association of devotees.
Yes, that's exactly right. Srila Prabhupada said, I have founded the International Society for Krishna Consciousness to give the world association of devotees. That's the sum and substance of it. And what does one do in the association of devotees? One doesn't talk about the stock market. One doesn't talk about the cricket matches. One talks about Krishna. Because in the association of devotees, there is hearing and chanting about Krishna. And that is what should happen in the association of devotees. So this is the great gift that Srila Prabhupada has given us. That is the reason we have these temples, and that is the reason we have communities of devotees who gather around the temple. I think you also have small groups, right? Bhakti Vriksha groups? What do you call Sangha groups? What do you call them? Bhakti Vriksha groups?
Yeah, Bhakti Vriksha groups.
How many groups do you have?
Nine groups.
Nine groups, okay. So you have so many groups of devotees who meet regularly, once a week, I suppose?
Yes, ma'am.
Once a week you meet, maybe 5, 10, 15, 20, whatever number, you meet together, you hear and chant about Krishna together. I suppose you have some kind of a protocol that you follow. You discuss certain topics from Srila Prabhupada's books, you chant kirtan. So this is very nice. And similarly, all the groups come together and in the temple on certain occasions, hopefully more often, whether it's the morning or whether it's a Sunday program and on other occasions. So we gather together in the temple here, we hear and chant about Krishna, we render varieties of services to Krishna, and when we are not able to come to the temple, then we also meet elsewhere in the city in little groups once a week and hear and chant about Krishna. So whether it's the small groups meeting outside or whether it's the temple, the purpose is the same. So both must work in harmony, in synchronicity, that's the word, yes? Synchronized with each other so that all achieve one goal. Everywhere I travel, I also encourage devotees to make these small groups, whatever name you may give them or call them. It's very helpful to have these little groups. Some of the benefits that are achieved by having devotees meeting in these small groups are that, number one, you can actually hear and chant together in a much more personal way. And people can ask questions, because sometimes in large groups, say 100, 200, people may feel awkward to ask questions or share their thoughts and so on. And it may not be a focused discussion. For example, we have Sunday programs, but it's a general verse, a general topic. But when you meet together in a small group, you can have a syllabus, you can go ahead in a very systematic manner. So it's very personalized training in the philosophy and practice of Krishna consciousness. This is an important benefit. One can also give personalized care to devotees, which becomes more and more difficult when the community of devotees grows larger in number. So it becomes difficult to check with everyone what they are doing. Are you chanting your rounds, Prabhu? One time in one temple, I happened to ask one devotee, how's your chanting going? This was the first time I met him. And he looked at me with his mouth open and said, you know, in 12 years, nobody has asked me this question. He said, when I was a new devotee, everything was fine. Everyone looked after me nicely. So once I'm initiated, now no one cares. I said, no, maybe it's just so busy. So yeah, it's not that no one cares. It's just that the devotee community has become so big and it's just physically difficult to everyone to ask about everyone else, and it's just too complicated with so many people. So kind of arrangement where the community of devotees is split up into smaller groups is just very helpful. And then you get together, you can discuss your chanting, you can discuss, you know, all the issues that come up in the practice of Krishna consciousness. You can go deeper into Prabhupada's books in a very systematic manner. So there are all these services that can be done in a smaller level. Personalized training, personalized care. So these are the benefits enormously, which sometimes are difficult for a temple to do when you all meet together. However, there's also the other side of it, which I caution everywhere I go, which is that one must not get disconnected from the temple. The groups must not become islands unto themselves. That is also something that happens in many of the places I travel to. The groups become isolated from each other. The groups do not mingle with other groups. That is why we have the temple. The temple is a central place where all the groups must come together. The purpose is the same. You hear and chant here, you hear and chant there. You serve here, you serve there. But by coming together here, you are going to create a mood of unity, of a larger devotee family, and the devotees in each group get exposed to many other devotees. Whereas in the small group, the devotees are exposed only to one devotee who's leading the group. But here they get the exposure to many other devotees, including visiting devotees, also resident devotees, which is a great, which is very important actually. Our exposure to the movement should become broad and wide and not be just restricted to one particular small thing. Also, there is the thing that I have seen elsewhere, that in this island consciousness, so to speak, the leaders of the Bhakti Vriksha or the Bhakti or Sangha groups, they call different names in different places. They have slightly different programs in different countries. But there is also the risk that they tend to kind of try to control everything, which is also not good. The spirit of these groups is that we are all servants of the devotees. We are here to serve. We are not the leaders actually. Servants, we are the servants of all the devotees. And so we come together as servants in the temple, we mingle together, and then the joy of Krishna consciousness increases. We are here to serve the temple. Because the temple is the main place where all of us can gather. And the other benefit of having a temple, and I think we'll discuss this probably this afternoon, is that you can have grand festivals here, which is difficult to have in a smaller group. And the power of numbers is also significant. When there's many people singing together, hearing together, it's very inspiring. So it's wonderful that we have all these nice groups, and it's really good. So there are pros and there are cons, and we have to see that the cons are eliminated and the pros are strengthened. And then we will have nice, a wonderful devotee family. It's already wonderful. It will become even more wonderful in Perth. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes, Amayatma Prabhu.
So Maharaj, you were talking about the importance of devotee association.
Right.
And that association now, taste for Krishna Katha is increased. So is coming together and glorifying Krishna in the group, is that the way, main way that we can increase our taste for Krishna Katha? Or are there also other ways that we can increase our taste for Krishna?
Okay, so the question is that, is coming together with devotees and hearing and chanting about Krishna the only way to increase our taste for Krishna consciousness, or are there other ways as well? Certainly there are other ways as well, but this is the primary method, the main thing. When we are not in the position to associate with devotees and hear and chant, then we should do it privately, in our own homes or in the ashram or wherever. We can read Prabhupada's books, we can chant to ourselves, those who are householders can do it at home, sing and chant together. So definitely we should also try to relish the taste of Krishna consciousness when we are in our own space. At the same time, the primary method is to gather with other devotees and hear and chant. It's much more powerful like that. So we should have a combination of both these things. And when we engage in devotional service and acts of spreading the message of Krishna consciousness, that also gives us the nectar. The reciprocation that we have, the mercy that we get because of the efforts involved in doing this, or may Krishna give us that happiness, that taste. So, mainly coming together, hearing and chanting, then in our private space, reading, hearing, chanting, and thirdly, spreading the message everywhere. Harinam Sankirtan, book distribution, going and speaking about Krishna to everyone. This will also give us that taste. Any other question?
Yeah. Sorry, just to continue. And like in terms of when we do come together with each other, either in small numbers or big numbers, sometimes there's a tendency to socialize because we may not be trained to like talk Krishna Katha and the pastime. So we may feel a little bit timid to talk Krishna Katha. So it's easy to talk about mundane subjects in one sense. So how do we kind of rise up and become more fluent talking Krishna Katha?
A good question. Amayatma Prabhu's questions are always very thoughtful and to the point. So the question is that when we do come to the association of devotees, we are not usually so trained to only focus the discussions on Krishna. And we might talk about so many other topics, mundane topics, and we just tend to use it as an occasion for socializing. Yes, indeed, that happens. Some degree of socializing, I guess, is all right, because, devotees as it is are told not to associate with non-devotees. So they cut off their friend circle everywhere else. Otherwise, they normally would have gone and been gossiping with somebody else, sitting in the bar or sitting somewhere else, and talking all sorts of things. So they've given up that association. The only friendship they have is here, mostly, with devotees. So when they come, they also want to talk a few other things, about their day-to-day issues in life, and maybe the children with school and whatever else, how's the job going? Oh, I had this problem in the office or whatever, So a little bit of that, I guess, is all right, but not inside the temple certainly, and just to some degree, not that that's all we do when we come to the association of devotees, a little bit outside the temple, maybe privately, not that it becomes a major topic of discussion with everybody gathered together and so on. A little something, yes, yeah, socialize, okay, you know. But primarily, it must be Krishna conscious. It could be something of a practical nature, you know, regarding some services. You got to organize something for the kitchen, or you got to organize some Harinam Sankirtan party, so what's got to be done for that? So whether it's direct Krishna Katha, you know, speaking the pastimes of Krishna, or whether it is about some practical devotional service to be done, etc., things connected to Krishna. That should be the topic of discussion. But even when it comes to talking about making arrangements for Krishna conscious activities, which we call management, that is fine, that is required, essential. Without this, everything collapses. But we must also leave time specifically for doing what we are doing now. Just sitting and hearing from the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. Leaving aside all other practical things, this task is very important. One time one devotee asked in a class, I think it was Mayapur or someone, I was giving class, and he said, you know, because that was a very philosophical class, because that was the topic, you know, we discuss whatever is in the topic, the verse and the purport. So he said, you know, we want to hear things which are practical, which we can practically apply to our life. So that was this devotee's complaint against the class, that, you know, it was too philosophical for him and he wasn't kind of able to relate to it. We want something that will practically help us in our life. So I explained that, look, first of all, you know, the custom in the Bhagavatam class is to discuss whatever is there in the verse and the purport and elaborate on that a little bit. Secondly, what can be more practical than sitting in a class and getting your heart purified of material contamination? What other practical things you talk about, how to get rid of stress? Yeah, stress busting, how to be able to concentrate the mind. And everywhere I go, people just tell me, talk on these practical topics. There's no taste in these topics, you know. But you have to do it because, okay, you have to preach and you have to speak about, you know, something. And so stress management and all of that is not really the most... Excuse me. Not the most exciting topics to talk about. But we may do it for the sake of preaching. But the real stuff is here. So we should gather together here and in other places, like we have our Bhakti Vriksha groups, etc. And we should discuss there. So even when the Bhakti Vriksha groups meet in your homes, you know, if some of you, are any of you Bhakti Vriksha, you must be all parts of the program. Sorry?
A few devotees, Bhakti Vriksha
members. Bhakti Vriksha members are here?
Members as well as the leaders.
Leaders are there. Okay, good. Very nice. So we also have to see that the socializing point that you mentioned, that doesn't happen too much even at these home programs. It's natural because householders come together and, you know, the children, and there's all sorts of shouting and this and that. And okay, to some degree, fine. But it should not become just very casual and very, you know, shall we say, loose. Yeah, we are here for a purpose. It's serious business. Krishna consciousness. Sit together, hear, chant. But it doesn't mean that serious business means that you never smile and there can be no humor and not like that. All right, have a little something. But let the focus not be disturbed. Let the focus be on this. Okay? Yes. Hema Krishna Prabhu.
Maharaj. Even among the bhakti riksha, like servant leaders, they do come together to help to do certain things in the temple and all that. But one thing that is common sometimes is some conflict among the leaders. So, what would you suggest would be the best way that they can be helped to work in unity, in the mood of being the servant of the servant, always thinking to serve, you know? Let's say there's one main leader, they should serve him, and you know, on and off we also get leaders, the bit of conflict here and there, and disrupts the flow of the seva.
Mm-hmm.
And how, in let's say in the long term, what are the methods that we should use so that the understanding go deeper, so that they do not, you know, they overcome all these.
I see. Okay.
Perfections.
So your question is, I'm repeating the question because sometimes everybody may not hear the question. It's also going on the internet, I believe. So. One day, these days, one has to be very careful what one speaks, because the next day is up on the internet, and you never know, in some corner of the world, someone has objection to what you said and something. So, your question is that sometimes we see that leaders, or bhakti vriksha leaders, also sometimes may have conflict with each other, and that disrupts the service. So, what should be done to ensure that this doesn't happen, or to resolve this problem? Well, first of all, this is a very common issue because in the material world, conflict is very common. And conflict comes about for various reasons. But often, it comes about for non-Krishna conscious reasons. Sometimes there can be Krishna conscious difference of opinion also. Two very Krishna conscious people may strongly differ on something, but they will know the etiquette of how to differ. And that difference, Srila Prabhupada explains, is spiritual. However, often, and especially this happens if somebody is not sufficiently advanced in Krishna consciousness, there may be some materialistic aspect of our consciousness which comes to the fore, and that causes some disruption in relationships and in dealings. So one has to be careful about these things. So since you've asked the question, and I see this everywhere, it's not just here, because it's a material world, we should expect this to happen. Kali Yuga, Kalaha, age of quarrels, so it's going to happen. Not that we rationalize it and justify it and say it's okay because it's Kali Yuga, we can continue to have conflict. No, that's not it. How are we different from the materialistic people if we just continue to do that? So we have to come to a higher level of consciousness. I think it was Einstein or someone who said that a problem can be solved only by coming to a higher level of consciousness than the consciousness involved that created the problem in the first place. So whenever there's a problem, there's a certain level of consciousness that goes with it. So if you want to solve the problem, you have to come to a higher level of consciousness. Otherwise you cannot resolve it. If you try to resolve it in the same level of consciousness, it just gets worse. So we just have to make a clean break and come to a higher level and see things from a different perspective. So that's point number one. Point number two, the way to do that is to just become more Krishna conscious. Very simple. There is no solution to conflict ultimately apart from a very high degree of Krishna consciousness. The more Krishna conscious we are, the more we will realize how to deal with others, how to deal with situations and events. And the more the Vaishnava qualities will manifest in our personality, humility, forgiveness, tolerance, understanding, the spirit of sacrifice, not wanting to take credit, etc., etc. So these are the positive qualities that make for a harmonious team. Whereas the absence of these qualities will create the opposite. So one has to perform one's sadhana, one's Krishna consciousness very strongly, which means all devotees, and especially those who are taking leadership responsibilities, must come together and hear and chant about Krishna with everybody else. It is very common in all temples that those doing services and management are so busy, understandably, that they don't get much time to hear and chant with the devotees. And that's a big mistake. Especially those who are in management and other leadership roles must come, sit in the class and hear. They must chant kirtan with the devotees. They must also spend time reading. So they will become more Krishna conscious and they'll be able to handle all the issues that come up in the course of their services. So that's another point. The next point is that there is no substitute for humility, for developing the mood of being the servant of the devotees. Yesterday we went for a retreat and I was mentioning the same point. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. Gopi Bhartuhu Padakamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudasaha. Unless we are convinced that we are the servant of the devotees and we try to internalize this as much as possible, it will not be possible to prevent conflict. It's not that differences of opinion will not be there. In fact, they will be there. Differences of opinion are natural and perhaps to some degree desirable. Imagine if all of us liked only lemon juice and nobody liked orange juice. You know, we are not robots. We are individuals. We all have our unique ways of thinking, of approaching matters. You know, we have different tastes, different desires. Even in the spiritual world, everyone is a unique individual. Nobody is identical, even in the spiritual world. But they have something in common, and that is Krishna consciousness. And that one thing is so powerful, so overwhelming, that all the other different approaches to different topics get harmonized in that oneness of objective, which is to please Krishna. Will I be pleasing Krishna if I fight with the other devotee or have a quarrel with him? Will I be pleasing Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, if, let's say, the service is disrupted because of some issue like this? So what will it take then to resolve this problem? Does it mean that I have to just stand for what I say because what I say is right? There was one time I was with one sannyasi and two devotees came with some issue they had. They wanted to discuss that. And he told them one thing very nice, because both were saying, I'm right. And he said, do you want to be right or do you want to be Krishna conscious? Such a beautiful point. Sometimes we may be right even in our points. Maybe the other person is also right at the same time. Two rights are also possible. But even if the other person is wrong and I am right, it doesn't mean I have to make an issue of it. I may be right, but I have to do what is Krishna conscious. What's going to help the other devotees and me progress in our Krishna consciousness? What's going to help this community of devotees grow and flourish? What's going to help spreading of Krishna consciousness everywhere? It's not about me. It's about Krishna. It's about Prabhupada. It's about the devotees. It's about the suffering conditioned souls in this world. So therefore, when we change our mindset, we change our approach, And we say, no, whatever it may be, yes, I am not a pure devotee, I still have some ego, I still have some self-interest, but let me try sincerely to take a humble approach. Let me try to be a little broad-minded. Let me try to accommodate everybody along with me as we go along. So we can consciously attempt to try to be a servant of the devotees. If this is the mentality we have, everything will be just sublime. Even when there are differences of opinion, and they will be resolved easily. Because we will not make big issues out of it. And even when there are issues, then there is a mechanism to solve it. And even if it doesn't get solved, then we understand it's Krishna's arrangement. Of course, there's also something called svabhava or nature. So someone has a kshatriya nature, doesn't let go, wants to go for it. Someone has a brahmanical nature, it's okay, it's all right. But generally, these situations can be avoided if people are Krishna conscious and understand that they are servants of the devotees. A genuine devotee, even if he has many disciples, is a guru, will always think that I am the servant of my disciples. You know, this is the consciousness of a Vaishnava. So everyone should think of himself or herself as a servant of the devotees. This will solve all the problems. And finally, at a practical level, conflict also arises because of lack of proper management, lack of proper planning, lack of proper vision. There is also one important reason for conflict which we see happening everywhere. I give this example often. I was in one temple in another country many years ago, and I was scheduled to visit some university college for some lecture. And there was confusion because there was a communication gap between the devotees. Someone was supposed to arrange the program, someone thought someone else is going to arrange it. So the publicity hadn't been done adequately. And then one person realized that publicity hadn't been done, and then the poster hadn't been put up somewhere. And then he started, why didn't you do that? No, I thought someone else was going to do it. And then it went like that. Then we ended up there and the mic wasn't there. So who's going to arrange the mic? Someone was supposed to do that. We were supposed to liaise with the university authorities to see that the microphone is there. And they were arguing, you know, what happened? Who was supposed to do it? And then came prasadam time. Oh, I forgot to tell the kitchen. You had to make, you know, also the halwa, not just the khichdi. But why didn't you tell? Why did you forget? You know. Yes? And then I'm supposed to give a lecture after that. So I'm watching all this and I'm saying, when you start a lecture, you want a peaceful mind, isn't it? So you don't have to be in a conflict resolution mode. You want to just be peaceful so you can focus on what you want to say. Now these are innocent little things. They didn't mean bad. They're nice devotees. But it's just not skilled. Yeah, I forgot. Somebody forgot the serving spoon also after that. So then there was further problems. You know. They finally, someone went in a scooter, rushed and got some prasadam, but he forgot the serving spoon. And then there was again, how am I going to serve if there's no serving spoon? Why didn't you bring the serving spoon? Unnecessary conflict. Simply because they're just not trained properly in how to do things in a systematic manner. You know, so devotees must also have that skill of how to organize things well, how to deal with resources, how to deal with money, how to deal with devotees, you know. Then automatically conflict comes down. So we should learn to plan properly. We should learn the art of leadership. These are skills that we must develop, how to take other people along with us. Whether we're doing one particular activity, a small project, how to involve other people also, so they also feel enthused to participate in this. So these are some thoughts. I think I went too far, too long, I think. But anyway, these are important topics that any temple or any community faces. Right? So I hope that helped. Okay, thank you. Yes, Mataji.
Just on the point you were talking about regarding association and the importance of having devotee association to advance in Krishna consciousness, which is what we are here to do, so that we can go in the broader community and do that. My position, and it's come through a number of incidents and built up over a period of time now, is that I've come to that realization that compatibility in association is really important. So compatibility could be a case of having 2 or 200 devotees. When I hear classes like this, it brings up a number of, in a way, disturbance in my mind, because having come through the journey that I have been through, I've come to that point of realization, well, not necessarily association of 200 devotees is going to help me or help them in my association, for that matter, to advance. So please help me with this.
Okay, so your question is that whilst association of devotees is very important and we hear and chant in their midst, but there is also the consideration of compatibility. And sometimes it's not just the quantity, that one may be in the midst of 200 and not feel the connection, and sometimes one may be in a much smaller group and feel the connection. So compatibility is important. Indeed, yes, that's true. Compatibility is important. And even as devotees, there will be differences of nature, and not every devotee will be able to be 100% compatible with every other devotee, because as I said, we are unique individuals. However, there has to be a certain minimum compatibility which should be there in any society of human beings. Right? Number one. Number two, we're not just ordinary human beings. We are trying to be something more. We're trying to be good devotees, pure devotees. So there's a further ground for compatibility, which is Krishna consciousness. So we come together to hear and chant about Krishna, and that's where our compatibility comes from. The lack of compatibility comes from the mind and the body. So if we are focusing more on the soul and the spiritual needs that we have, which is hearing about Krishna, then our level of compatibility will increase significantly. And on the level of the body, mind, and natures and so on, whatever little bit of incompatibility is there will be there, okay? So we can just be courteous. Hare Krishna, Hari Bol, how are you? Nice, and go on. And then we can be close with other devotees with whom we feel a sense of compatibility. But we should try to be in a mood of harmony with everybody, whatever be the situation, because ultimately at the end of the day everyone is part and parcel of Krishna, is a devotee of Krishna. Does it answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Any other question? Yes, Muralidhar Prabhu.
Maharaj, is completely different from the discussion we had here, but I was thinking about this this disciples course, which has been very well designed and very, very a very essential course for ISKCON as such.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is your opinion about when should this disciples course be introduced to the newcomers who come through the Bhakti Viksha programs? Because many new devotees come through the Bhakti Viksha programs, and I do not know what is ISKCON's policy on this, when the disciples course should be introduced and how it can be introduced. Can it be coming through the Bhakti Viksha programs, because that is where they first come to know about the tattva and other aspects?
Okay, so your question is that there is a guru disciples course now. At what point should devotees be introduced to this course? Should it be before they come to the Bhakti Vrikshas, during, or when? Because mostly, at least in many cases, people become devotees through the Bhakti Vriksha system. Well, I don't know if there is any specific rule about that. I'm not aware. But generally, the ISKCON law or ISKCON procedure is that when one comes to Krishna consciousness, the first duty of the devotees or the preachers is to make the aspiring devotee have faith in Krishna, at least to understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and gradually to make that devotee have faith in Srila Prabhupada, in Srila Prabhupada's books, in Srila Prabhupada's mission, and so on. This is primary. When one's faith is very strong or reasonably strong, then one should see by natural course if the new devotee is... So they should first of all chant Prabhupada's pranam mantra as they come in and become devotees. That's the first thing. Then gradually, as they start understanding what Krishna consciousness is and what ISKCON is, then they might realize that I want to take initiation from a particular personality within ISKCON, and they're also taking shiksha from various sources. So then they can chant with... There's a procedure for that. With the permission of that spiritual master, you chant the pranam mantra. But you can't do that till at least 6 months, or I think it's 1 year, I forget now, till you've been chanting 16 rounds. Yeah? Then you start chanting the pranam mantra, then you've got to be doing it for a certain period of time, and then you're eligible to actually take initiation. Now, this is the general process. There is much more. There are many other things. I think time does not permit us to talk about this, etc. The devotees who come in, they usually don't know how ISKCON works, and so they're pretty much led by the devotees who are preaching to them. So it is good that once to introduce them to this guru-disciple course, once they are a little familiar, somewhat familiar with the philosophy, because just brand new and they don't just bring them off the street into a guru-disciple course may not be so appropriate, but at least they have some understanding and they know that there is need for guru, then they should go through this course before they have selected who they want their spiritual master to be. That is always a healthy thing. Then once they go through the course, they understand what it means. What is Diksha Guru? What is Shiksha Guru? What is all this about? Then they should have the freedom to decide whom they want to accept initiation from. And it's not a matter of somebody telling somebody else, you know, where they should take initiation from. It's something that is between that devotee and Krishna. Many times it happens to me when I travel, devotees come and ask me, whom should I take initiation from? I said, I can never tell you that, because that's between you and Krishna. So they say, how do I know who to take initiation from? I said, you pray to Krishna, because it's something very personal for you. And so you pray to Krishna, chant your rounds well, do your Krishna consciousness well, and Krishna will give you the inspiration from within your heart as to what you should do. It's not something I should tell you, or anyone else for that matter should tell you. It's something that you have to decide, but you have to decide when you are sufficiently well versed with the philosophy to understand what you're getting into. It should not be just done sentimentally or just whimsically or just in the spur of the moment. It should be a well-considered decision. So, I don't know if I've addressed your points.
You addressed it. I just want to say whether, from that point of view of a well-considered decision, it may be required to have this disciples course as part of the Bhakti Vriksha program itself. Today we have some modules of going through the Bhakti Vriksha. But I feel also that the disciples course should be an integral part of the Bhakti Vriksha course itself, or the programs.
Okay, so your question is that the Guru-Disciple course, why not make it a part of the Bhakti Vriksha program? Well, that can be done, certainly. Certainly it can be done. And it should be commonly done for all the Bhakti Vrikshas. Meaning, because for each Bhakti Vriksha leader to do that, it will be a very small group, maybe two or three, you can't have a course. So if something regularly happening in the temple periodically every now and then, and then all the Bhakti Vrikshas will send in their devotees to be part of this course, so they understand what it's all about. But this is an issue I get asked all the time, every temple where I go. These are issues that come up. So, fine. Okay? So, we've really gone a long way ahead. Thank you very much. Anyway, today is Sunday. You don't have to go to work. So, I think it's all right. So, my best wishes to all of you for your Krishna consciousness ahead. Wonderful things are happening here in Perth. And I wish you all the best, that the Krishna consciousness may flourish more and more. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Hari Hari Bol.